Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves. You're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry, the Bahamas and USA.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's B-Mac behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So still the aftermath of firing Lovie Smith. The coaching search going on. The Houston Texans have the second pick in the draft, the 12th pick in the draft. The offseason's far more entertaining than the regular season, am I right?
Do you detect any lies
that the offseason's way better than the Houston Texans? I'm fired up for the offseason. I was not fired up for the regular season.
And we talked about it as we led into the offseason before the final week of the regular season. Going, if Lovie Smith's still the coach, is there anything to get you excited? Sure, maybe the number one pick. Well, you didn't get that either. However, because of the changes made, because of the fact that feathers have been ruffled, because of the way the press conference has gone, you have a fan base that is looking for change, excited for what's to come next, and believes that they might finally be on the path to improving this franchise.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's the desire. That's the dream. And a lot of people don't trust the organization, which I think is fair. I think that you look at Cal McNair, what he's done as the CEO, whatever his title is. He's the de facto owner. Nick Caserio hasn't really earned the trust of the city as well. I don't think anybody really trusts Caserio at this point, to be completely honest with you.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think there's people that look at Caserio hopeful, that think he has a chance, that think it's possible. But I think even like the most optimistic Nick Caserio guys don't think it's like a slam dunk. Don't think it's a guarantee.
No, and you know what? And the reason why, getting back to your earlier point, no one has been given any reason to trust this team. To trust this team, this organization, this general manager, this owner, because of all the missteps of the recent history. Mm-hmm. So they're already basically 1 foot out the door. But then they're looking at a general manager whom they know has a 6-year contract, if they do any research at all. They know that even if he wasn't supposed to have it completely turned around by now, he shouldn't have taken the major steps in the big pile of dookie that he has multiple times in successive seasons, to where you're like, man, I don't know what they're doing, but I surely hope they get their bleep straight quick, because this is not a good look.
Caserio went on PP today on the Highway to Hell, and there are a lot of interesting things he had. The morning show.
Oh.
PP.
I didn't know.
Is that not what it's called?
I don't know.
On the Highway to Hell? Yeah. PP. Hayden Pendergast, PP.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, anyways,
I didn't know that there was a name to it. Like
he
that.
Was on. They spent 20 minutes talking about wrestling, but there were some interesting things that he had to say. And there's a lot of times that Caserio does the word salad thing. Mm-hmm. You have to listen for 30 minutes of Caserio, whether it's on with PP or whether it's at a press conference, and you can maybe get 3 nuggets out of it. If you listen close enough, you can pull 3 nuggets for 30 minutes of Nick Caserio talking. He's pretty good at that. He's pretty good filibuster. He should go do that, on the Capitol. But a few things that stood out to me, like whenever he had the press conference on Monday, he talked about the resigning, stepping down as the Texans GM. He kind of backed off that, by the way. He said he didn't really do a great job of maybe articulating the message that he was trying to send.
After we had the conversation, before you get into that, I went back and listened to it a few more times.
Yeah.
I changed my opinion a little bit.
Once
I heard it a couple more times, I think what he was saying was, if there was a Belichick, Parcells, Sean Payton-esque, or maybe even a Harbaugh because of his problems in the past with Trent Baalke type candidate that they really liked, that really had an issue with him, that he'd be willing to possibly step aside, not quit or resign, but maybe take a different role with the organization. But I don't think he was talking about like resigning.
I don't even think it was that. I think a lot of people took it that way the first time. But today he said like what he was trying to really articulate, the message he was trying to send across, was that he was trying to show that he's accountable. And he was also said something about how the organization comes first, which was my theory, that there's not one single person that's bigger than the organization. Bill Belichick always doing what's right by the organization. And that was like his way to try to magnify the point, was like, look, I'm willing to move aside. I'm willing to take a different role if it's in the best interest of the organization. I don't know if anybody really believed that. It was just kind of a weird way to highlight the message, showing that the organization comes first and then the whole accountability thing. But he also says like he feels like he put the organization in a pretty good spot. Like he feels they're in a pretty good spot right now, which I don't necessarily disagree.
I don't either.
The talent has gotten better. You have two picks in the top 12 coming up in this year's draft. You have tons of cap space, and you still have two first-rounders in 2024 as well.
You got enough out of the Watson deal,
yeah,
which was a big concern when he took over. So I think when he's trying to like blow his own horn and celebrate his successes, I think part of doing that is saying, we got enough out of Watson to where we're going to add more quality players, and my draft a year ago looks to be better than average. I did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair for Caserio, but it's kind of interesting from, you know, one side of his mouth, well, I'm trying to take accountability, and then on the other side of the mouth, you know, we feel like we're in a pretty good spot. I feel like we've achieved some things. I feel like we have a good, young, talented roster. We have draft picks. We have cap space. So it's kind of contradicting when he says the two things, but whatever. One of the most interesting things that he said was he basically called out Aaron Wilson's report. He didn't call out Aaron Wilson by name. He didn't mention any of the candidates that were the, you know, that were mentioned for like rumors and things like that. He said that you have to be careful with news that's reported about certain candidates that may or may not be interested in the job. But the actual truth is, whenever you talk to the representatives of coaching candidate, whatever, that they're actually very interested. Which, if we look at the Texans, you know, coaches that they've thought about bringing in for an interview, the only one that we've heard that would not be interested in the job was D'Amico Ryans.
Yep.
Aaron Wilson's report saying that D'Amico Ryans had no plans on pursuing the Houston Texans job. So that was very clearly to me, Nick Caserio, I don't want to say he was taking a shot at Aaron Wilson, but he was dispelling the notion that D'Amico Ryans wouldn't be interested in the Houston Texans job.
Yeah, I think that it actually probably can go further than that, and it might. But I think that as they and I think they have to expand the list. I think they just gave
really?
You. I think they just gave you that initial five to show you that it's not going to be like last time. Like, they're not going to sit on their thumbs and sit back and
they
watch.
They added Kafka last night.
Yeah, so I think that they're going to continue to add. I would be surprised if they didn't get close to 10.
Why, though? Like, I feel like this list is good enough. Like,
can I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any, at this point, this go-around, no stone should be left unturned. Like, you should have at least had a conversation. It doesn't cost you to have a conversation with anybody.
Sure.
And so, if you want to look at some of the maybe not necessarily quote-unquote old school, but you want to look at a Harbaugh, you still want to have at least a conversation with Peyton and see what it might cost just in case. But at least you looked under every single possible garbage can and rock and kicked every can down the road until you said, you know what? We still believe we have the right 3 to 4 that we're going to zero in on and the one guy that we really want.
I just don't know if you add people to this list, if it makes the list like more attractive. The two names you mentioned would, Harbaugh and Peyton, but after that, you're kind of going down in the weeds a little bit, where all of a sudden that list becomes a little bit watered down.
What about
down
Cliff
to
Kingsbury?
Me. Absolutely not. Like, if Cliff Kingsbury's added to the interview list, that waters it down for me. Like, I'm not as impressed with the interview list that they have if you add a Cliff Kingsbury.
See, I think that from their perspective, too, based on what happened the last go-round when there was a Matt Eberflus and you rumored to be other guys that didn't even want to interview or consider the Texans, if you can at least have a cup of coffee with those kind of guys, it shows you, I think the organization, again, because they're always super focused on perception. Perception is everybody would like to talk to the Texans about their job this go-round.
Uh-huh.
And then you could also, look, I think you get a lot of intel, too. You get a really, truly old-school guy like Peyton to tell you, because you expect he's going to be a straight shooter and tell you what's wrong with the organization or why he would have apprehension. Same thing with a guy that just got out of the coaching ranks in Kingsbury. A guy like a Harbaugh who's been there, done that, that knows what works and doesn't, to say, this bothers me, this worries me, I like this.
Sure. I like the idea of like talking to those guys to get intel. I hesitate to mention the last one that you did. If you want to like bring in a Peyton to talk to him, I don't think it's realistic. But hey, it's a conversation. Conversation can lead to intel, data. I like data. And then you make of it what you will. Same thing with Harbaugh. Like, if you want to go down that route. I believe that, but who I want as a head coach, there's two guys that I want as a head coach, and they're already on this list. So there's no need from my point of view to extend the list. I want Benny Johnson, and if it's not Benny Johnson, I want D'Amico Ryan, Gary Kubiak as offensive coordinator. Like, and that's it for me. Like, it doesn't matter who else you bring in, that opinion's not going to change. I'm not going to back down from that opinion. So if you bring in a Peyton, you bring in a Harbaugh, you bring in a Cliff, you bring in a Leslie Frazier, you bring in an Eric Bieniemy, it's not going to change anything for me.
So for me, the top of the list for me is this go-round, based on what you went through last go-round with a defensive-minded head coach that's old school. I want a more modern, younger coach, and I'd like an offensive-minded coach with offensive being the specialty. Yep. Nothing against these young defensive coordinators that are in the mix. But to me, because of the fact that you're planning on in the next year, if you want to just leave it open-ended and say in the next year to 2 years, you're going to get your franchise quarterback. You're going to start focusing more on upgrading the offense. You already have a young running back. I want to be able to say that I have two guys in the room and constantly focused on making this team the most productive offensive unit they can be. And so, therefore, this go-around, I want an offensive-minded coach.
Yep.
I don't want to offend any of the defensive coordinators, but that's just my personal opinion. And I'm with you. You and I have said all along, I think Ben Johnson, for what he's shown in a year's time from an organization that was run into the dumpster, that looked like with not a whole lot to work with, to do what he was able to do, to be as productive as he was able to be on offense, and to show the innovation in some of the play calling and the way he was able to execute, even if we've talked about in the past, you didn't know if your players could execute the plays you wanted to run, they did. And so that's exciting to me to pair him with another offensive mind that he would obviously have a relationship in and bring in to make whoever you have playing quarterback and other skill positions better.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. A few more things I want to touch on that Caserio had to say. I want to push back. Like, I love Benny Johnson. Benny Johnson's my top target. I don't know if there's another OC, though, that's currently on this list or that is out there that I would rather have over D'Amico Ryan. So, like, I want offense, too. But if it's not Benny Johnson, I want it to be D'Amico Ryan. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Caserio talked to PP on Highway to Hell. A lot of interesting things to say. Cal McNair also...
You talked to your PP?
Cal McNair? No, I do not.
Okay, I'm just.
It's been a while since I've talked to PP.
Okay,
a little bit. I left them a couple years ago.
Yep.
I think the last time I talked to one half of PP was during Texans training camp. I think that was the last time. I always wished them the good guys though.
No, that's what I said because someone the other day on Twitch, like, got all adamant about who their go-to show was and was like,
Twitter.
And he wanted to kind of crank it up a notch at us, and I was like,
I don't think he did. I don't think he cranked it up a notch. I think you might have misread that situation a little bit.
Okay, maybe, but I just wanted to be very clear that I like those guys. I'm friends with those guys. I don't have any animosity to those guys, but, I mean, to each his own, whoever likes whatever they like.
Because I could see it from both. I saw it from your angle, but I also saw it from, like, the opposite angle. Quite honestly, I don't know, but I thought it was funny. I don't care. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to some of the other interesting things that Caserio had to say with PP, but let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Julian, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Julian?
Good afternoon, guys. Bang, bang, Niner game.
Here we go.
Hey, look, man, I think it has to be Ben Johnson. If the parameters are followed, which y'all set forth, offense, young guy, someone that can grow with the young quarterback. D'Amico, he doesn't have the defense set in place for the Texans, and I think that's why he didn't want to come. No playmakers, I mean, other than Stingley, which y'all used him wrong.
Julian, hold on a second. I got to cut you off here a little bit, Julian. Is this recommendation of Benny Johnson because you do not want D'Amico Ryans to leave the Bay?
Oh, good call.
Negative, sir, because if he doesn't come to you, he has plenty of people that want him to go.
That's true.
Think he's going to be a head coach.
That's true. Do you think the Niners are going to win it all, brother?
I think if Purdy can continue to do what he's doing as far as not turning the ball over, absolutely, sir. CMC with that defense is potent as hell.
I'm excited to watch them. Appreciate the call, Julian.
I picked them to get there. I just didn't pick them to win it.
I need to – that just reminded me I need to do a couple of things. Julian, appreciate the call, Julian. I think I'm pulling for the Niners in the NFC. I like that team a lot. They're a fun team.
Oh, in the NFC, yes. I could never do that to have them.
That makes sense. You have the rivalry of Green Bay. Yeah. I really like to watch Kyle Shanahan. I wanted the Texans to fire Kyle Shanahan. This is one of the hot takes that I had that people thought I was nuts for way back in the day. And then you fast forward, you know, never wrong, just always early. Remember when Bill O'Brien beat the Raiders in the wild card round of the playoffs? B-Mac probably remembers the years. He's better at that than me, like 16 or so.
That was around there. 16, Osweiler year.
And then remember you had Bill O'Brien that was flirting with other teams around the NFL. Like, oh, yeah, he might leave the Texans to go be a head coach anywhere else. No, it was the year that the Falcons went to the Super Bowl. What year was that?
That was also the 2016 season.
Okay, so it was the 2016 season. I said that the Texans should tell Bill O'Brien to hit the road, go take whatever head coaching job you want, improve at the head coach position, and hire Kyle Shanahan. People thought I was nuts for that. You're not going to fire a playoff coach. You're not going to fire a playoff coach for an OC. Well, how would we feel about that now?
Time out.
We feel all right if the Texans did that?
Take the OC caveat out of it. The Chargers damn well could still fire their head coach, too, and they're a playoff team, just because of the fact that that dude is so off the grid. Like, he does things so crazily that he's driven people nuts that I think if they didn't make the playoffs, he'd already be gone. The Black Monday would have already taken him out, too.
I think so, too.
But, you know, I think from the standpoint of Shanahan, the only way that I think that it would make sense, I don't think he even wants this, but it would be where if you gave him total control, if you gave him Belichick-esque control and let him be the coach and general manager and you know, have complete autonomy over everybody on the football side and it paid him a whole boatload of money. But other than that, he ain't going anywhere. He's got a great relationship with Lynch. He can do whatever he wants. He gets whichever players he wants. He's talked about even when it was down to when they were talking about trying to get Stafford. You know, as soon as he wanted him, he just placed one call to Lynch. They were in consideration. Rodgers the same way. Lynch isn't going to say no to Shanahan. So it would have to be an absolute massive deal to for him to come to another location without a lot more control and a lot more money.
Here's where this was back in 16.
I'm saying you're right here.
This was I was playing around with some ideas earlier today because I'm of the belief that whoever you hire as head coach, part of the reason that you get him is that you're enticing him. Well, I mean, you're enticing him for many different reasons. I think the Texans' job is actually not that bad. I think that they do have some young, nucleus players. They have number 2, number 12. They have 2 first-rounders next year. They have cap space. I think that there is some positive. And I don't think any of the other jobs around the league are all that great either. Like, all the other jobs are like have their own issues and problems. But I believe that to entice whichever head coach that you entice, I want Benny Johnson or D'Amico Ryans, that part of bringing them to Houston is that you say, here's pick number 2. You can have pick number 2 to do whatever you want to do. If it's D'Amico Ryans, are we sure he goes quarterback? Like, if it's D'Amico Ryans and he's trying to build a stellar defense, and this is where I'm going to push back at Julian, who just called a little bit, saying that D'Amico's not going to want the Texans because that defense isn't going to be very good. Let's just assume that the Texans is part of the way to bring D'Amico to Houston is to give him the number 2 pick. You're drafting either Will Anderson or Jalen Carter, and then maybe you even go defense at 12. I don't know who's going to be there at 12. Maybe a Brian Breesy from Clemson. And all of a sudden, you have a really good defensive line with Stingley, with Petrie, with Christian Harris. That's a pretty good defense like that if you go defense
is,
2-12.
But I, again, that's another reason why I'm just so focused on an offensive-minded
sure,
head coach.
But like, and I know that it's difficult to go there because you're like offensive-minded right now, and so am I. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm pushing back to Julian's point.
Right.
Like, he's saying that D'Amico, there's no way D'Amico would be the head coach of the Texans because he doesn't like what they have in place defensively. Well, if the Texans are bullish and Cal McNair wants to bring one of his own back to Houston and D'Amico Ryans is part of agreeing to become the next head coach of the Texans, says, look, I'll come, but you got to give me Will Anderson or Jalen Carter at number 2, and you have to give me the best defensive player at number 12. All of a sudden, that defense is there. That defense is all of a sudden really exciting. It might not be good right away, but you have 2 first-rounders there. You have Jalen Petrie, Christian Harris, and you have Derek Stingley Jr., and some pretty good role players aside from that.
You've seen it before. Like, when the Texans were really good on offense, and they were trying to lure Wade Phillips back, Rick Smith brought in Wade Phillips and said, you have the first pick. Our first pick in the first round, which was like 11. And he took J.J. Watt. And they basically said, we know the defense needs to improve, so we're going to get your input, and we're going to let you have a seat at the table as we try and improve our defense. And so he was highly motivated to get J.J. Watt. He had input on other picks. And you look at it and say, that's a way you can get your guy. I just think that as good as the defense can be, as good as the Niners' defense has shown everybody that they can make a team relevant even if they don't have a, you know, a big-time quarterback, I just believe that this team, for where they are and for who's going to be on the table, I don't think they can afford to make the same stipulations to a defensive-minded coaching candidate as they would to an offensive-minded coaching candidate.
Maybe not, but maybe if and this is a lot of ifs and hypotheticals, but if Cal is bullish on D'Amico and D'Amico says, the only way I do that is if I get two defensive players, 2 and 12. Now you have the makings of a really good foundation defensively. You would still have lots of concerns offensively because what are you doing at quarterback? That would be kind of, it would be very scary. Alex is saying, are the Texans willing to look past D'Amico's lawsuit from back in the day? I've talked to some people that say they don't think that that would be a make or break any other way. Battery Chuck says Ryan's is never coming here. Nick Caserio disagrees. Nick Caserio told PP today on the Highway to Hell that all the reports that there are certain candidates that wouldn't be interested in the job are the furthest thing from the truth.
Doesn't Caserio have to say that, though? Because if it is true,
then he kind of went out of his way to bring it up, though. Like, he wasn't put, like, his feet weren't to the fire. He didn't have to speak on it at all.
I know, but it's a bad look on the franchise if people are turning down interviews. It's making the franchise look like a less desirable location.
Why bring it up? Why would you bring it up?
I mean, why would he bring it up? I mean, he's trying to dispel the notion that the franchise is an attractive job.
I just don't think that you bring it up whenever it's kind of unprovoked. Like, oh, I mean, yeah, there's dudes.
We talked yesterday about how hot his seat is, and his job hinging upon the success of this next coaching hire. He needs to candidates.
If you say that and then D'Amico Ryans turns down the interview request, it makes him look foolish.
Assuming it comes out as a further proof that he did, in fact, turn it down, that may go as something that we'll never know in the end.
Would come out. I mean, everybody that you interview is like picking up a player on waivers. It's transactional. You have to report it through the NFL. True.
I think there's reason for them to try to deny that report to save face.
Yeah, I just don't think you do it unprovoked, especially if there is risk that D'Amico Ryans turns down the request. I guess we'll have to hurry up and wait when it comes to that. A couple of the other things that he brought up, clarified on the untapped resources, because this was the big question I have. We're using untapped resources that we've never used before? Why not? He kind of clarified, said that they're a collective entity, which kind of like goes to what you were saying, like the circle of trust. He said maybe some outside resources that you haven't used previously. He also mentioned analytics and people in the building. The analytics thing to me was weird. Like, if you're hiring a head coach, what analytics are you looking at?
Yeah, analytics have little to do. You know what? The only way analytics is, if we go back to a Dusty Baker type analogy, the only way analytics makes sense is it factors into the equation by you need a coach that's open to analytics, that is open to the idea of considering when you strategize and what you do on a daily basis is involving analytics. Because we know Dusty's not an analytics guy. We know old school guys are probably going to be more just X's and O's and get down in the trenches and do what you need to do, kind of blood, sweat, and tears guys, and they don't want to hear about that numbers crap. But so I think that's the only way that it actually factor into a head coach.
Especially coming off of Lovie, I would think he might fall into that camp.
I think that's probably a good guess.
The analytic thing was weird. He also dispelled the notion he needs a big quarterback, which is kind of interesting, picking at number two. There's a Bryce Young there. And he said he can't make decisions based on who their agent is.
Because Mulligetta represents C.J. Stroud.
You know what's interesting about Stroud, though, by the way? He's not declared for the draft. He's not declared.
The more
for the
I thought
draft.
About it, and the more we've been kind of separated on this, I was thinking about this last night. Is it fair to say the least risky of the top three quarterbacks is C.J. Stroud? I'm not saying he's the most can't miss.
No, I think he's the riskiest.
Why?
Because I don't think he's all that great.
I just think he has more size than Young.
He has
more mobility and athleticism than Levis.
Disagree.
I don't
disagree.
I just, because the more that I'm starting to watch Levis, the more I don't, he doesn't look mobile.
Okay, I'll tweet out some highlights.
Okay, that's fine, and I know you've taken a deeper dive than me, but I mean, what I saw even in that semifinal game of his ability to extend plays, to get out and run, to make throws that I didn't think he was capable of making,
yeah.
I was like, I'll agree with that. Now I'm a little bit more wide-eyed to the fact that maybe Stroud is the safest of the three guys.
He was more athletic than I thought based on that Georgia game. Like he put things on display that we had not seen throughout the regular season. That did impress me. I feel better about Stroud today than I did prior to the Georgia game because we didn't see a whole lot of that element.
Can I ask
you
a question on all that you've watched on Levis?
Uh-huh.
Have you seen Happy Feet?
I could see that a little bit.
Okay.
I could see that a little bit.
From what when I was looking, and I don't want to look at just because he's got a big arm.
He also never has time to throw.
And he's a big dude. And true. And I think that I factored that in. But the same way that I'm in love with Bryce Young's intangibles and his ability to have pocket presence and kind of not get too excited, happy feet or panic. That's the one thing that I did. Not looking for negatives, but if the first negative I would say about a Levis is it looked like the internal clock was ticking kind of fast.
And it was clicking fast.
Because
yeah. he doesn't like pressure living in the backfield. But he was pretty good at, like, there's times whenever he has really good pocket presence where he's able to pick up the rush, know where it's coming from, step in the pocket, deliver a great throw. And there's other times where he's, like, tucking in and running for his life, especially this year because he's hurt so much. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, the Cal McNair part of this, he said that he was going to be transparent. He said he was going to be open for everybody, then took a seat in the second row. But he did do a one-on-one interview with the Houston Chronicle. Some interesting things Cal McNair had to say. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Somebody asking us about Stetson Bennett.
Okay. As a backup?
I got about as much of an NFL chance as Stetson Bennett. I'm just kidding. I saw some people toying with the idea that maybe they could move him to receiver. I don't see that.
Stop that. Well, okay.
I think he's got a better chance of making the NFL's receiver than a quarterback.
As a backup quarterback, I don't.
I mean, could he be a Julian Edelman? Put on some white?
I was going to say your favorite Hunter Renfrow would be the guy that everybody's hoping that he could be.
Don't disrespect Hunter Renfrow.
Well, I'm saying, but I could say the same people that say he should go, you know, make the transition to wide receiver, and then they're going to be, he could be the next Hunter Renfrow. No, he couldn't. And I don't think he's not a Greg Ward Jr. either. I don't think he's a wide receiver. I don't think he's that kind of guy.
I don't really either.
I don't think he has that toughness. I don't think he has that durability. I mean, and he's a smaller guy. I think, like we talked about yesterday, I think for short spurts, he could be a guy that's a backup quarterback, that's a great practice guy, a great locker room guy, a very intelligent guy. And if you needed him for a game or two or to kind of carry the torch while your starting quarterback's hurt, I think you could get by with him.
I like this text from 1516. Like the show, Billy. I don't know who he's referring
Billy.
To. No idea. Wrong about Nick. He has hired two bad coaches, and last year's first rounders were a bust. Y'all wanted Eric B. last year, and now on to flavor of the month. Quit giving Nick a pass. We didn't want Eric B.
Like, we did not.
If you're referring to Eric Bieniemy, we did not want Eric Bieniemy. As far as last year's first rounders being a bust, I think that that's harsh. I don't think that that's fair. Derek Stingley, whenever he played, was good at football. He was having to play a lot of zone. That wasn't his, you know, that's not his forte, even though he's pretty good at it. But he didn't put it on display like Sauce Gardner. I saw Pro Football Focus scores, by the way, and they had Sauce Gardner as the best cornerback grade in the NFL. The best, not the best amongst rookies.
Knew this was going to happen,
the
right?
The best corner in the league.
We knew it was going to happen. We just didn't know Lovie was never going to play man.
Well, he said all offseason, though, I don't always do that, and we're willing to evolve. And then it's like, okay, you lied to us because that's all you did.
Yeah, and so, look, kudos to Sauce Gardner. But I don't think because of Sauce Gardner's quick success, you should just shut the door and crap all over Stingley.
And I think it's fair. Look, and even if Sauce has like a better career than Stingley, you could say it's a miss and all of that. But if Stingley turns out to be a good football player, and I think that he will, I don't know if you can bash the pick.
I was going to say it's two separate things. If you want to say that Sauce outplayed Stingley, absolutely. But does that mean that they can't both be above average good football players in the NFL? Absolutely not. It's like I can give Sauce his flowers, but I can still be very, very excited about the possibilities that Stingley brings to the table as a corner for the Texans.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other, the Kenyon Green was up and down. There was times whenever he did look like, you know, a first-round guard, and then there was other times where he looked like a fifth-round guard.
And again, it could be as easy as saying when he blocked for the run, there were times that he could bulldoze people and look like he knew what he was doing. When he pass blocked, he looked like he was junior college level.
Yeah, he needs to, he needs to find consistency. There's no doubt about that. Consistency is important when it comes to Kenyon Green. All right, let's get into what Cal McNair had to say to the Houston Chronicle. He did a one-on-one with the Chronicle. He said he was going to be transparent, so here's his transparency, talking with the Chronicle. A couple of reasons on why he fired Lovie Smith, and I want to hear from you, Blankers, if you think that, you know, any of this is not the truth. We weren't happy with what was happening. That's what led to the decision. I don't know that you can say we were expecting if we got four wins he would have stayed. I don't think it was that simple. I think it's fair, right? They weren't happy. I don't think anybody in the city was happy with the direction of the Texans and why they moved on from Lovie Smith. I think that's a fair reason.
Yeah, look, I think there's plenty of reasons. I think if that's the best he's going to give us in terms of transparency, we'll take it with it. I mean, for what it's worth, it's coming from him. I guess we're supposed to believe it. But I think it didn't take Cal McNair to tell us what we already saw progress throughout the entire season, whether we got the inside scoop on what happened behind the four walls or not.
Here's another one that he had to say about the firing of Lovie, but you look at the whole body of work and not just one thing in particular. Are you convinced that you were seeing the progress you want to see? Are you convinced of that? I'm not. Are you seeing the players develop?
Some.
Some, probably not some, to the point
some
that
on
you
a
wanted.
Really rapid scale.
Yeah.
And others, like a Kenyon Green we just talked about, that give you reason for pause, going, sure hope he can pick some things up in the offseason and next year.
Davis Mills? Are you seeing all these different things, adaptability? Can you play one way one week and another way and another week, change things at halftime? Those were questions that Cal answered a question with a series of a bunch of other questions. His response to the national criticism, because we've seen it from Ryan Clark, Stephen A. Smith, Robert Griffin III. Cal said, when you look at the statistics, when you look at the wins, you look at how many home games we won. That's kind of an interesting way to look at it. And I know these national guys, they don't study the team like y'all do. You have watched every game. I doubt they have watched every game. During the middle part of the year, it was hard to watch some of those games. Jacksonville was a hard game to watch.
6-3, right?
What's that?
Was that the final 6-3 of the Jacksonville game?
No, I think he's referring to the Week 17 game.
Oh, the home game.
Yeah, when they got hammered.
Yeah.
They got absolutely hammered. So I think that
the 6-3 game wasn't anything that you're going to send a film to the Hall of Fame.
No, I think his response to the national criticism is fair. Like, I think Stephen A. Smith was watching the Houston Texans on a week-in, week-out basis? Absolutely not. Was Ryan Clark? Was Robert Griffin III? Absolutely not. So those guys, they see second black head coach fired after one season, and that does raise a red flag.
Sure.
Absolutely.
We said it was coming.
But whenever you're here locally and you live and breathe it every single second of the day, all week during football season, completely fair.
Look, and I think that the one thing that if you just go back and look at what Cal McNair did to kind of resurrect, and I think he had a lot of help, resurrect his image, and then when you hear his sound bites, you realize that he finally, if he doesn't get the football side of it, he gets the marketing side of it. From burgers at camp to talking about uniform changes because he knows that's a hot button with fans that will put him in a good light with the fan base. It seems like everything he's trying to do and what he's focused on right now is changing his image to be a guy that cares, to be a guy that's engaged. That's why he had to tell you, this go-round, I'm going to be heavily involved in everything that we do. I mean, you hear every soundbite and it tells me nothing more than to start with that he is going to be the owner of the fans now. He's going to be committed.
Do you like that, though?
I mean, we've had this conversation before. I don't need Jerry Jones. I don't need Dan Snyder. But I also don't need a guy that's so completely out of the realm of the day-to-day that doesn't even know that you traded your best receiver for a bowl of soup.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I don't want an owner plaque, like, facilitating the fans. I don't want to be, to take
verbally,
a poll.
Verbally, it's fine.
What's that?
Verbally, you can feed them all. I mean, look, everybody does it. They feed him a line every single day, and he's fed us plenty of lines recently. But, you know, how far he goes for it, I don't care if I get a burger from the owner at training camp or not.
Yeah.
I just care that he makes the right decisions when they're necessary.
But I don't want him to post a Twitter poll on who the next head coach of the Texans should be. And he takes the most popular
Now you're
answer.
Opening yourself up for just a boomtown.
Who should we take at number two? What do you think, Texans fans? And then listen to what the Texans
fans
say.
That's for your marketing department.
That's what I'm worried about.
And your website guy.
That's what I mean. I'm a little worried about that they're going to start listening to the fan perspective a little bit too much. The assessment of Caserio basically echoed what he said during the press conference. Has done a good job of personnel. When I look at the young guys, they're the ones making plays on Sunday. They're really in a bright spot. The draft picks to work through that. What we worked with in the past few years as far as trading a certain player, somehow getting the value. His efforts to clean up the cap, work on the roster, and do all these things has gotten us to where I'm really excited about the future and our opportunities. I give him a lot of credit for doing that. It's interesting because Cal's like comments towards Caserio have been very positive. They've been very, very positive towards Caserio, but then Caserio at the press conference looked like a beaten man. You know what I'm saying? So like maybe Cal behind closed doors was, you know, reading them the riot act, you know, putting them on the hot seat. But publicly, he's been very supportive of Nick Caserio.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've seen a guy that from the, I mean, he had to justify the hire, I think, early on. But you're right. Every time there's a microphone and cameras in front of him, he's told you what a smart guy Nick is, what a competent guy Nick is, how good he is at his job, at least in terms of player and talent evaluation. So I don't think that's changed. But I do think that there was a meeting in the principal's office. I think that some wrists were slapped. I think that there were some stern talkings that went on. And I can't believe how stern it was coming from Cal. But someone in the room, maybe it was Hannah, was able to say, hey, look, this is an embarrassment, and this has got to stop. And the missteps, and again, as much as they've absorbed and endured the money that they've now had to pay out for multiple guys that are collecting checks for doing nothing anymore for the franchise, they might be able to endure it. They're not happy about it. No owner giving away free cash is giddy about that.
No, he's not. He's not pleased about it. He's willing to do it. He's not pleased about it. Last one on McNair. We're going to be fearless and make hard decisions. The easy thing would be not to make hard decisions, but that's not my belief. We need to challenge ourselves and try to push ourselves to be the best we can be. And if that means making a hard decision and being more involved somewhere to get us a great team on the field and get these fans, which are great fans, something to be in the building cheering for and having more home playoff games, that's what we want. I actually believe Cal. I think Cal has been fearless and has made hard decisions. I really do. He fired O'Brien middle of the season. He kept Jack Easterby when the easy thing would have been to fire him. He fired two black coaches after 1 year each. I think Cal is willing to make hard decisions. I think he's proven that.
I think he's made some tough decisions. I don't know if they're the right decisions. I think keeping Easterby when everybody, whether you were a genius or not, saw that it was time to move on from him was one that I would question that he still kept him around and kept him in the – you know, having some input as much as he waned him away from that and finally got rid of him. But you're right. He has had to make some tough decisions. I think, again, everything that I see is he's fan-focused. He's everything that he's talking about is because he realizes, look, what we've always heard about these owners is
currently.
Right.
He wasn't changed. When he kept Easterby.
He's right. He's changed. He's now completely fan-focused. And he realizes at the end of the day when we've heard all these ex-players and other people that have been in organizations tell us, hey, look, ownership, you want to believe that they care about the team and the moves, and unless you're Jerry Jones and maybe a sprinkling of a handful of others that are highly engaged in it. The rest of the owners, winning is just the icing on the cake. What they really care about is the bottom line, and he realizes his bottom line was negatively affected by the fact that people didn't want anything to do with the Texans. They didn't want to buy the merchandise. They didn't want to buy the tickets, and they thought that the entire franchise was a laughingstock, and he's trying to change that. Because he knows that directly impacts his revenue.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. How attractive is the Texans opening? Where is it related to the rest of the openings around the NFL? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we'll get into how attractive this Houston Texans job is relative to the rest of the NFL in a moment. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Let's go out there first, 713-780-3776. Shannon wants in here on the Texans front office. Shannon, what's up? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick comment. I've heard the press conference, heard what Cal had to say. I heard what Nick had to say. But you know what? After three coaches in 3 years, how does Nick get a pass? He's getting a pass because you bring in a new coach hypothetically, you bring in a new coach. He goes 4 wins or less with a potential rookie quarterback, and or Davis Mills starting again. And does he get fired? Or does he give it another chance? So somebody's got to get fired if this goes tanks out again in the next year. Is it Nick? Or does people like the NAACP, the LULAC, or anybody else come and sue the Texans for their hiring practices? So I just think it's, if he really wanted to get the public opinion, he should have just cleaned house completely.
How are the hiring practices off here, though, Shannon? That's what I'm curious about, because I understand the point. I think it's a good point,
well,
a good call.
I mean, you guys are,
I think it's the firing
practice. Yeah, you guys are giving... Right. Yeah, you guys are giving Nick the credit for, oh, he's such a great talent evaluator.
But No, we have not done
that. Cal said that. He's
not a good hiring manager, I tell you that.
Shannon, I agree with that. I actually do agree that he's not a great hiring manager, and there is some, you know, there's some questions on, you know, what the process was like in year one, what the process was like in year two. Questionable hiring manager, I think that is saying the bare minimum, because you absolutely – what I would push back on, though, is like the hiring process when it comes to like the NAACP. Like, I don't understand where you're going with that.
Well, I mean, he's had 3 black coaches. Well, 2 black coaches in a row. He's only given them a year to do whatever. Okay, he's only given them a year to bring a franchise back to winning with a very non-talented roster.
Do you think the roster's more talented now than it was a year ago?
Probably so. She also had people that got injured and things happened. So they didn't play the full year, those rookies. Mitchie didn't play. You know, Stingley was out for, you know, quite a few games. So a lot of problems.
But isn't that giving Caserio a pass? If you yourself are saying that guys that he drafted were injured?
Well, so people get injured all the time.
Yeah.
They had no depth. They had no depth. I'll tell you that. So when you've got Pierce getting injured and you bringing in Burkhead, so that's no depth at all. And so these are the type of things that you don't get even a second opportunity to even correct some of those things, or even when your roster gets a little more depth in it through this next cycle, you don't give them an opportunity. So if they go 4 and, you know, whatever next year,
yeah,
if they even go that, what's going to happen? The coach is going to get fired again?
I've got one more question for you, Shannon, because I think you're making a lot of excellent points. Do you think the next head coach the Texans hire will be better than Lovie Smith?
Could be a great coach. Could be a great coach in the eyes of a lot of people when they get hired. Yeah. But the results, it's all about results.
Yeah, I agree.
All about results.
Appreciate the call, Shannon. Thanks for listening into the Killer Bees. I think Shannon's points are good points. I'm of the opinion that if I'm making it, you know, if I'm Cal McNair, if I'm Nick Caserio, and I have to hire the best head coach possible, you can make the case that he didn't get it right in year one. And I think it'd be a safe case to make. You can make the case, I think it'd be a safe case to make, that he didn't get it right in year two. You're hoping, and look, the third time the charm, right? You're hoping that you finally get a head coach that's worth his weight in gold. To Shannon's points about, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't have hired Kelly the first time. Maybe you shouldn't have hired Lovie the second time. Like going out to get them and then firing them after 1 year, I understand from like a public relation point of view how bad of a look it is. They also paid them a lot of money. And like Kelly got paid out for the 4 or 5 years of his contract, got paid a ton. Lovie Smith got paid a ton as well. And to his point, he wants Nick Caserio to have more accountability, more responsibility for what's happening with the Texans. And I agree with that.
We all agree with that.
And I think Cal McNair, in a big way, put Nick Caserio like to the pressure cooker. Like this season going forward is very, like we can't take a step back. It needs to be progression, and it needs to be a good amount of progression going forward, or we're going to get rid of you. And I also think Cal McNair looked at Nick Caserio and say, okay, this is your third hire. This is the dude that you're going to get fired with. None of the stuff that's happened prior to this even like matters, though. Because like, who hired Lovie Smith? Was it Cal? Was it Caserio? Doesn't matter. Who hired David Culley? Was it Easterby? Was it Caserio? It doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters anymore, because going forward, it's going
to
be Caserio and the coach that he hires, and that's who he's going to live or die with.
And I've said this. No matter whether he did it or not, it's on his shoulders, right? It looks like he's responsible. And we don't know what happened internally. But to Shannon's point, look, first and foremost, I've been very critical. We've been very, very honest about all the shortcomings of Nick Caserio, too. But you can't rebuild this team in a year and a half with a draft and a half. And so there's lots of things that we don't know that is probably behind why he wasn't on the hot seat more and considered to be fired or fired by the ownership, because they know about the Easterby involvement. They know about what happened with Brian Flores, a situation that altered and greatly affected the second hire. But they also know that the time is now, that everybody knows that regardless if he has a six-year deal or not, like, it's time to either put up or shut up, and it's all on his shoulders even more so now. But now we're actually going to clearly define and concisely give the reins to him to do what he thinks and he should be able to do. So I don't think we're giving anybody a pass per se. But I also think the same way when you were bringing up the NAACP and all these different the hiring practices and what would be scrutinized. The fact that they were willing to hire two black coaches in two straight years, it's not something that they're getting credit for, but they should at least get the same kind of consideration if you're looking for them to be scrutinized, because it's not a good look. And we said all along, if they were going to fire two black coaches in two straight years, it is a horrible look, and they are going to get pelted for it. But if you truly believe this is not about race and this is about football and this is about giving the team the best chance to win and do the things you're expecting them to do by progressing, and now you're going to have the draft capital to improve the team greatly, especially on the offensive side of the football where you think you're going to get your franchise quarterback, and you have an old school defensive-minded head coach, it doesn't make sense.
I understand, though, from like the free pass from Caserio, because it's justified to fire Cully after he wins four games. It's justified to fire Lovie Smith after he wins three games. But how come it's the white general manager that also doesn't get the X? Like, I totally understand that perspective. And to Shannon's point, it's a result-based business. So I understand that. But a lot of it is also the context of hiring somebody and firing somebody. After year one, did any of us think that David Culley should get a second year? No.
No.
In hindsight, they should have given him a second year, because it would have made this firing way easier and it kept him out of criticism, because you have David Culley, who has 2 years right on the job. He wins seven games. They should have just kept David
Culley. They would have been in the exact – well, you know what? They actually probably would have gotten the number one pick.
Yeah.
They would have been in the same situation. And you're right. They would have taken no scrutiny because they held on to the guy for 2 years instead of – trying to get a different guy in year two.
And even, I mean, Lovie probably would have still been your defensive coordinator. Like, yeah, he wasn't going anywhere. No one was going to hire him away from you. David Culley hasn't had a job. He's not going to get another job. Lovie Smith is not going to be a head coach again in the NFL. He's not going to be a DC again in the NFL. That's because their stature of where they are currently in the NFL, quite frankly, isn't very good. Like, there are better head coach candidates, better defensive coordinator candidates than Lovie Smith, than David Culley, even though he was a wide receivers coach. But I get Shannon's point of like, okay, if you're firing Culley, justified, four wins, justified. Lovie Smith, you fire him, three wins, that's, it's, you know, justifiable, firing him. Why does Caserio, who's won seven games in 2 years, why does he keep his job? Like, I understand that point of view. I would answer the question by saying he's built up this team with draft capital. I'm not going to say inherited, because Lamont doesn't like when we use inherited. The situation that he took over was in salary cap
less than
hell.
Ideal.
Salary cap hell. The franchise quarterback demanded a trade. Then it came out that he was a sexual pervert, made Nick Caserio's job much, much tougher. I do think that the arrow for this organization, and we're going to talk about where the Texans head coaching vacancy ranks amongst the other vacancies around the NFL, it is trending upwards. Did he get the Stingley pick absolutely right? No, he should have picked Sauce. Was the Kenyon Green pick great? No, absolutely. It wasn't great. He had a bad rookie season. But the talent pool of this team is much better. The salary cap room is much better. You're about to have 40-something million dollars to spend. You have two first-round picks in the top 12. You have two more the year after that. Caserio is building something here, and you have to understand the context of a general manager is more about the long term, where head coach, it's all about the short term.
It's also what we said. It's the whiteboard. So you can point to quickly the obvious with the coaching hires and firings to say that these were shortcomings of Nick Caserio. But we also like to point out the positives. We're an honest show as we give our opinions on all these situations. And we've been able to give you positives as well as negatives for Caserio. Has he done great? No. Has he treaded water? Absolutely. Could he get better? Sure. But at the same time, he's only been on the job for less than 2 years as well. And rebuilding and restructuring an entire franchise coming from the depths of the dead and then some, what we're talking about, not starting with an even clean slate, made it even more difficult to where you can give him one more year. And we've been adamant about saying, hey, look, in a year's time, if we're still in this predicament, There's no doubt that not only should he be on the hot side, he probably won't be here anymore.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Just how attractive is this Houston Texans head coaching job? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Let's go. Fun. Sports.